This is Sarah Holmes. I'm head of meetings with OMFIF, and I'm joined today by the esteemed Deputy Governor Perry from Bank Indonesia. He is joining OMFIF today for a meeting, and he has been speaking with a delegation of around 22 of our members on policy mix and reforms in a resilient and progressive economy. So thank you very much for joining
us. My pleasure, Sarah.
To start things off, we should talk about the ASEAN Vision 2020 scheme. What are the primary achievements of this from Bank Indonesia's point of view?
ASEAN has been moving forward aggressively in toward how the more greater integrated economic and financial region. We have been in the past has been progressively moving toward economic integration. You know, reduction the tariff, custom harmonization, a number of initiatives in making ASEAN as one single economy and the market. What we are focusing at the moment, moving forward the ASEAN financial integration. You know, for the 2025, I'm co-chairing the senior level committee of ASEAN Financial Integration. We have been developing the roadmap to the ASEAN Financial Integration, which is actually have strategic as well action program, how we can be more integrated in the financial aspect, more stable and more inclusive. On the more integrated, of course, we have been successful in the farm in the past of the ASEAN banking integration framework. We are discussing with a number of members how can a number of have a qualified ASEAN bank within the region. We also developing a number of aspect on the stability, for example, harmonizing our supervision and regulatory framework, as well as we are have a joint program for financial inclusion. So going forward, together with greater economic integration that we are already progressing quite well, we want to be facilitate the greater economic integration with more greater integrated and stable and inclusive financial support that go with it.
Fantastic. So looking on a more domestic level then, how does Bank Indonesia use the three main policy pillars to achieve and maintain stability?
We adopted the policy mix, so speak, in the central banks. In the past, we have been successful in creating, you know, credibility and monetary policy. We combine now with greater exchange rate flexibility, as well as how we use macroprudential and as well a payment system that join. So the three pillar of monetary policy, macroprudential, and payment system that actually support the overall macroeconomic and financial stability. First, on the interest rate, we always set our interest rate policy to make sure the inflation target is achieved. 4% this year and starting next year 3.5%. On the macroprudential, how we can use the loan-to-value ratio and other aspect liquidity provision to better serve the credit channel, interest rate reduction, and so on. On the payment system, how we introduce the electronic money, fintech, other aspect to be more efficient and more facilitation of the payment system, including also for the social program of the country. This is where actually the three pillar, monetary, macroprudential, and payment system, hand in hand, in the policy make of central bank, not only to make sure macroeconomic and financial stability, but how our policy can also better serve as support for the economic growth.
And just talking about financial inclusion then, how has Bank Indonesia worked to improve this over the past decade? And what are some of the future plans you have for further progress in this area?
Indonesia has what we call it the National Strategy for Financial Inclusion, which is chaired and set by the president. And Bank Indonesia is a member of a national committee for financial inclusion. Bank Indonesia focusing on a number of financial inclusion program in a number of areas. First, we set up what we call it the payment system, financial digital service, electronic money, cell phone, to address the financial inclusion. Because we understand from the poor and near poor segment of the people, they're more being effective, being catered for financial inclusion through the payment system. We have about 110 million people, but only 34% of them are with the bank. And more than that, only 17% are being facilitated financing by the bank. So through the payment system, electronic money, cell phone, and so on, they can be more reached out through this approach. Second, we facilitated the government social program. In the past, the government distributed the social program directly through the cash. But now we are introducing non-cash through mobile money, electronic card, and so on, which is being more effective. Those poor and near people that entitled of receiving social program, now they can be included in the finance sector through the payment system. And thirdly, the central bank, through our 45 branches throughout the country, we introduce a number of program to address the SME development, including also the woman empowerment. We set up a group of the household or SME, and we address them with a technical assistant from production to marketing, and we introduce them to the banking system. This is what we adopt throughout the current. This is the three program that the Central Bank, Bank Indonesia, introduced to facilitate and to accelerate the financial inclusion in Indonesia hand-in-hand with the government.
So it's a multi-pronged approach.
Yes, Sarah.
Indeed. Very good. And so I suppose we should talk about fintech, seeing as we just touched on sort of electronic money. What was the motivation behind setting up the Bank Indonesia's fintech office? And what have been the key developments there?
E-commerce, fintech is here, everywhere. And in Indonesia, where the telecommunication has been so, widely used throughout the country, including also the rural, why the fintech has been growing quite fast. Our IT industry has been also, growing very fast. And the youngest, the creative, economy, the introduced by the youngest is growing very fast. So this is where we need to set up the, what we call it, the fintech office, where this fintech community, we provide them with the association, we provide them the playground for them to, develop their ideas and so on, and direct them whether they, what the regulatory framework they actually suit for their, activity. Some of them are doing about fintech in the using the electronic money. For example, some of the domestic company that using in the past using cash, if you go to the restaurant and so on, they are using the e-pay, and so on. Some of them actually facilitate for the process of the credit card and so on. So where this is a regulatory framework needed, then we facilitate them what regulatory requirement that need that to be submitted. This is what we provide, what we call it, the regulatory sandbox, the playground to develop and what applicable regulatory. And a number of more than 100 companies are submitting their application. We select them. If they are still in the early development, then actually, okay, we just let them to develop their own. But if they already clear idea, then they can interact with the community. I think this is where actually the new digital economy has been developing quite fast in Indonesia, where actually from the regulatory perspective, we need to help them to develop. But at the end of the day, when there is a prudential or regulation that need to be required, that actually to ensure this consistent with the stability issues of the financial system, as well as the customer protection that need to be go with it in this development.
So yes, the sandbox acts as a sort of educational space for people, as well as enabling you to put in the right regulation. So what do you see as the key benefits of central bank issued digital currencies? And what would you say are the main risks with that as well as the benefits?
Well, this is the issue that is being faced by central bank throughout the world. There is a private digital currency, but there is also a recent and growing initiative throughout the central bank throughout the world. There is a need to have a central bank digital currency, because at the end of the day, if you talk about the currency, if you talk about the money, this is a fiat money. It's a legal tender, which is from the central bank as well as policy making need to ensure this is a legitimate payment instrument where central bank is the mandate to issue. But at the same time, from the central bank need to ensure the circulation also consistent with the mandate of monetary policy as well as overall macroeconomic stability. This is where actually some issue that being discussed as well as initiated in a number of central bank, where actually Bank Indonesia also we try to study the issue and the practice in other countries. But Sarah, this is some the new initiative that being monitor as well as assess and study throughout the world. Yeah.
There's a lot for yeah. everyone to learn. Yes. In that space, absolutely. So then just my last question for you, and I believe this is somewhat of a specialist subject for you. So how has the Bank Indonesia overcome regulatory and supervisory challenges to best utilize Islamic finance opportunities, especially with a view to infrastructure?
I think this is very important, and this is also glad you asked this, because last week, we had the first meeting of the National Financial System Development Committee, where the Islamic finance is one of the core issue that we are discussing. I think you're right that the infrastructure and the finance of it must need to be developed in Indonesia. Indonesia need and already processing quite well infrastructure development. You name it, toll road, seaport, airport, everywhere. A big city and throughout the countries. The finance using of the Islamic instrument is one of the, there is a three aspects that we need to develop. First, of course, the development of the infrastructure itself. We need some of the infrastructure project already identified what is can be used for through the commercial instrument. Second, what kind of instrument from the Islamic finance? A lot of instrument can use, whether you're talking about the sukuk or other instrument. And the third is, of course, the capacity to develop the project as well as the finance. So this is what we are discussing. The president has already asked us to accelerate it. For this, the government already have the commitment. Some of the government project actually has been designated to the finance through the Islamic finance, and we are working also to with the financial community to design what kind of Islamic finance to be suitable for that. Just a note, Sarah, I think Indonesia from the government one of the biggest sukuk issuance in the global. We already issue probably about $5 billion in the global market, especially from Europe and also Middle East. And I think more need to be done, not only for the government project, but a lot of private as well as infrastructure project for the country. I think this is what we are accelerating at the moment.
So some real achievements there, yeah. And a lot of potential as well.
Thank
you. So Deputy Governor Perry, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you. Thank you for coming to
my
see
pleasure,
us and
Sarah.
See you on FIF today. Thank
okay,
you.
My pleasure. Thank you.